to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 7, 2021. 10 years after gaining independence from Sudan, South Sudan still depends on her neighbors for reliable food supplies.
Most of the food items such as tomatoes and cabbage come from Uganda. Many people think oil is the only source of money, but instead we need to use the oil money to buy tractors and produce enough food.
And the relatives of the 1992 Juba massacre say the government of South Sudan should end violence in the country.
When they celebrate the day for the martyrs of the Republic of South Sudan, let them also recognize those people who got disappeared, those who got killed inside the country by the Arabs.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. After gaining independence from Sudan 10 years ago, South Sudan, with its vast agricultural land, depends on food imports from Kenya, Uganda, and Sudan. Farmers, non-governmental organizations, and the government say insecurity and other factors are responsible for the underdevelopment of the agricultural sector and the country's subsequent food shortages. The latest World Food Program Situational Report on South Sudan, published in June, estimates 7.2 million people, or 60% of the country's population, have faced high level of acute food insecurity from April to July this year. The United Nations say intercommunal violence and floods make it difficult for some South Sudanese to produce sufficient food. For VOA News, Daniel Martin Friday reports from Yei.
According to the latest World Food Programme South Sudan Situational Report published last month, 7.2 million people, or 60% of the country's population, are facing high levels of acute food insecurity from April to July 2021. The United Nations says intercommunal clashes, competition among groups over resources like farmland and water, floods along with other factors have made it difficult for South Sudanese to produce sufficient food. Ladolu Kang, chairperson of the South Sudan Chamber of Commerce, says despite gaining independence 10 years ago, the country imports 80% of its food supplies from neighboring countries.
Most of the food items such as tomatoes and cabbage come from Uganda. Many people think oil is the only source of money, but instead we need to use the oil money to buy tractors and produce enough food and also export. Since independence, we don't have factories and industries for producing cooking oils and sugar.
Lokang notes that South Sudan has vast areas of fertile soil which can produce enough food to feed its citizens. 43-year-old widow Ross Nyoka is a subsistence farmer. She says for years, insecurity around Yei has made it difficult to produce food.
When we go to the bush to farm, we are arrested and chased out, and what we want is that let the government open its eyes on us, the farmers, because we are depending on our farming for our livelihoods. And now, if we don't cultivate, we are forced to buy food items from outside the country.
Dara Felix is a progressive farmer in Yei River County. Dara says although South Sudan lies in the Green Belt region, which is suitable for agriculture, a lack of government investment and support makes it difficult for farmers to produce sufficient food. Dara says South Sudan has the potential for rapid economic growth if the government will begin investing in large-scale agricultural schemes, including setting up bank loans for farmers.
Our farmers are not supported. This is the reality. And you cannot talk about food security when we are using ordinary hoes. It is not possible. And so how can we do massive production when we don't have funds? Government is supposed to set aside monies that are to stimulate production. We need a bank that is to benefit farmers. Today, young people are not interested to do farming. How can we talk about hunger in the whole country when our people, when our lands can feed our people? Let us stop violence, allow us to do production so that we are able to feed our people.
Zara says in order for South Sudan's agriculture to flourish, the government needs to construct a road network and storage facilities, provide modern farming technologies, and link regional markets with international markets. Faustin Amba, program manager for the UAE-based NGO Mugo Development Organization, says before South Sudan gained independence, his organization invested huge resources into building the technical capacity of local farmers to engage in modern crop production. Amba says even though many farmers in the area now have the skills to produce food on large scale, which will reduce imports from neighboring countries, the 2016 conflict prevented individual farmers and farmers' cooperatives from producing surplus food for the market.
We have a virgin land, very productive soil, and the products brought from Uganda can probably be produced here. Meaning when we produce here, it will be cheap in terms of costs. Only the war of 2016 stopped it. Otherwise, up to this extent, we wouldn't have seen any matoke entering South Sudan, nor cabbage entering South Sudan. The government needs money. They need money, taxes. Why is the taxes? The taxes are from this common man. And when the common man is poor, the government didn't remain poor. If the common man is hungry, the government will be what? Hungry in terms of resources.
Dara Elisa, executive director of the South Sudanese NGO Mission to Alleviate Suffering in South Sudan, says with support from the Food and Agriculture Organization and other international agencies, his organization has been able to support more than 100,000 owners of small-scale farms in central and northern Bahr El Ghazal states, providing them with farm tools and seeds over the past several years. Dara says plans are underway to deliver tools and seeds to over 11,000 smallholders farmers to increase food production in the second crop planting season.
We've already prepositioned inputs for 11,412 households in Central Equatorial State, targeting two counties, Morobu and Yei counties. In northern Bahr El Ghazal, we have been doing rehabilitation of farms at the schools. We support them with inputs. It is an integrated kind of farming.
Dara says despite some government efforts to increase food production, insecurity still hinders efforts of humanitarian organizations to support farmers across the country. Majak Deng Kwol, Director General of the National Bureau of Standards, says his institution is working with other government agencies to deploy modern technologies for quality food processing, which will enable South Sudan's processed food products to compete in the world market.
We are working with them to improve the local produce. Like our honey now, fresh to outside, very nice quality, high quality. You know, our big challenge is we have a problem with cooperation with other institutions because the issue of the standard is the collective responsibility. And also those of private sector to make sure that they can buy the goods. We are requesting for our government to provide for us all the machines.
Chamber of Commerce Chairperson Ladulu Kang says all South Sudanese need is peace and security so that people return to their farms and produce food and reduce dependence on imported foods. Josephine Lago, the National Minister for Agriculture and Food Security, says the government is trying to improve food security by implementing the Revitalized Peace Agreement. Lago says her ministry needs more funding to support large-scale agricultural production schemes in Awil, Nzara in Western Equatoria, and Terekeka in Central Equatorial State. The three areas were known for producing rice, maize, and sugarcane before the war broke out.
It's absolutely important that indeed we as a country, we invest in agriculture. We want farmers, we want families, we want the organized, forces, we want churches to get involved in food production so that we stop, importing food from the neighboring country.
Lago says the government is working with the World Bank and other international bodies to boost agricultural production. James Boboya, a policy analyst with the Juba-based Institute for Policy and Research, says the government will invest oil revenues into the agriculture sector if it wants to see a vibrant and stable economy.
The way to go is for the government of South Sudan to come up the road to Yei, come up the road to Yambio, to Eastern Equatoria, areas that are more agricultural producing, so that farmers are able to bring their goods to the market. Private partnership is important in terms of the value addition. This is really food processing that needs to happen. If the Bank of South Sudan wants to help the South Sudanese, they should have gone this $5 million, maybe get $3 million or $4 million, invest this money in the production sector. And these productive sectors are, agriculture is one of them.
For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Ye Town, Central Equatorial State.
This week on Friday, South Sudan marks 10th Independence Anniversary Celebration. Our reporter Daniel Friday Martin took to the streets of Yei to ask South Sudanese how they feel about celebrating South Sudan's independence after years of conflict and other challenges.
I wish we should go back to Sudan. People are killing our brothers and sisters. Robbers are there. They are raping young girls. We cannot celebrate independence while others are in the bushes, while others are in the camp. Then how will you celebrate independence in South Sudan? That one cannot mean sense.
It means nothing to me because if there's no peace in the country, why should I, you know, celebrate the independence of this country? The leaders are not willing to have peace. The leaders are not willing to make peace. They are not ready to implement the peace agreement. So the independence means nothing to me. It is until they implement the peace agreement that we can celebrate the anniversaries to come. But for this one, as long as we remain in this situation where there are a lot of killings and so on, it means nothing. I am not in a free country because if I cannot move to my village to collect the remaining cassava, how can I say I'm in a free country? I'm not in a free country. I am in detention in my own country.
I'm feeling frustrated because right now we are living in fear in our own country and we call it an independent country. Because since independence, we don't have even any liberty called independence. Our country has been fighting the day it got its independence. What independence is that? We need a state that will give us the freedom until when people start to change the ruling of this country and the system of economic system, education, security, all these things, when they start to change development, then that's when I'll call South Sudan is independent. But right now, we are living worse than before when we got our independence.
The independence of South Sudan means to me that we are now in freedom. I want that the leaders should be people who should consider everybody equally. We want equality. We don't want segregation. Because segregation will cause more problems in our country. Tribalism is the worst thing that really spoils us in South Sudan. Because now if you get a manager in any place is from such a tribe, you get all the people under him are from that same tribe. We South Sudan, when we hear things being talked about us, we should at least try to reform.
Since we got our independence of South Sudan, I'm actually very happy because I feel like I get the freedom I had wanted. Compared to those times whereby you find the laws of the Southerners are different. Women are not supposed to do this. Women are not supposed to wear this and that. So, but finding that since we had got our own independence, we can move freely. You can wear what you want. So I just feel happy and I feel it's free and I'm free. My message to our leaders is that all we need is peace, because when there is peace in a country, we find that everything will be stable. We'll have better education, better access to health and to everything. We just need peace in this country.
Other countries, they are having these issues of corruption, but come to South Sudan, in this country of ours, corruption is done openly, and you are not supposed to talk about it as a minor or as a local citizen of this country. We are citizens, we get oppressed because of such kind of things. Since I grew up in this country, I'm hearing South Sudan is the main source where people can get oil in it, but as a citizen of this country, I'm not seeing anything like a citizen is having such kind of a percentage in the issue of the oil. You know, we as the citizens, we are having that hard for peace. We need the peace, but we don't know. We shall see peace today. Tomorrow, peace is not there. Today, peace. Tomorrow, peace is not there. And it looks awkward. My last message to our top leaders is, you know, when two elephants are fighting, it's the grass and the trees suffering.
We are independent country anyway, but the problem is this independent has got no meaning because there is insecurity here in Yei. Is a problem within us here, but I may say that there is nothing that even can please us because the movement is difficult.
We are very happy to be a South Sudanese as a nationality, so I have seen a lot of things happening around us. But if there is a lot of corruption and war in the country will not devolve. So it is better for us to be peaceful, and at least we should just work on our country and to be also better than other countries around South Sudan.
The 10th anniversary does not mean a lot to me because we are facing a lot of challenges as citizens of South Sudan. I want to talk about conflict issues that are going on. They are really affecting us so much in terms of, you know, getting developmental activities and so on. We expect more. We have not seen that development have been done to our expectation. So we need a lot to do, like the infrastructures. We need to see that schools are developed, health facilities are developed to improve the standard of living of the citizens of South Sudan. And my best advice is to our leaders is that we need to commit ourselves and work for peace. This is only for us to realize development in South Sudan.
Those are voices of South Sudanese on the streets of Yei expressing their feelings about South Sudan's 10th independence anniversary. Daniel Friday Martin collected this audio. Families whose relatives died in what is known as the 1992 Juba Massacre are urging the government of South Sudan to restore peace and develop the country as envisioned by those who shed their blood during South Sudan's struggle for independence. More than 300 people were killed during the Juba Massacre when Sudan government security forces arrested, detained, and later killed suspected SPLA supporters who are originally from South Sudan after rebels of the SPLA attempted to enter Juba in July 1992. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
The families of victims of the Juba massacre are today commemorating 29 years since their husbands, brothers, and relatives were murdered by the former Sudanese government. The family says they are celebrating the lives of their loved ones. Fidencia Charles Ladu, widow of Major Joseph Ladu, says the family of victims of the 1992 massacre wants the government to recognize the contribution of the heroes who died in the massacre, just as it recognizes other martyrs who died in the civil war that led to South Sudan independence.
When they celebrate the day for the martyrs of the Republic of South Sudan, let them also recognize those people who got disappeared, those who got killed inside the country by the Arabs. Let them also mention their names. Let them also put their names, their pictures up on the streets, like what they are doing for the other heroes who died in the front line. Otherwise, people will not be happy because I know very well, like for me, I know very well that those who have been inside here, they have really worked hard because I know some of them, they were meeting in my house. They were contacting the people in the bush. They used to communicate and it was very risky for them. So when the peace comes, the government is not mentioning them.
Ladu says as the country celebrates its 10th birthday in a few days, she believes her husband and his colleague did not die in vain. She says some of the family members of those who were arrested, detained, and killed in 1992 do not know where their loved ones were buried. Ladu says the widows and other family members of the victims of the Juba massacre want South Sudanese and Sudanese officials to publicly explain what happened to their loved ones and identified where they were buried so as they can exhume the bodies and give them a proper burial.
We hear rumors that some of them have been buried in Al Ghiyada area. I don't think really some of them would be alive, but as I told you, we know that according to rumors, according to what some people were saying, they were buried in a mass grave in Al Ghiyada area. And some of them have been thrown from up, they were put on a plane and they were thrown into the river. But it will not be right for somebody to think that some of them are alive. I don't think they are there. But what is the most important thing is that we need to have their remains. We need to be told about what happened to them.
Widow Marvel Pitia was married to Pitia Kenyi, who used to work in the prison service division. Marvel says she witnessed what happened to her husband on July 6 and 7, 1992. She says security forces arrested her husband at his workplace and he never returned home. She is urging the South Sudanese people to unite and work for a better South Sudan.
As a mother and widow to a late hero, he used to tell me that we should stay together and be united as South Sudanese. They used to love themselves and died for the liberation of this country so that people of this country would live in freedom.
In the past, Ladu says the then Sudanese government claimed that the officials arrested in 1992 were taken to Khartoum, charged with various crimes and later sentenced to death. Ladu says she does not believe victims of the Juba massacres were tried in a court of law, and unless she sees evidence of legal proceeding carried out in 1992. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Russia struggles to control the spread of COVID-19. Find out more after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Russian authorities say the country is facing a surge in new coronavirus infections. And as Charles Maines reports from Moscow, that has prompted a renewed effort to convince a skeptical public that the time to vaccinate is now.
Having once claimed victory over the coronavirus, Russia is now struggling again. A growing crisis fueled by the new Delta strain of the virus and Russians' reluctance to vaccinate. Just 12% of Russia's population has been vaccinated thus far, say experts, despite the government having unveiled its Sputnik V vaccine to much fanfare at the beginning of the year.
We at Russia do have a functional vaccine, and so the fact that people in Russia are not getting it en masse is a huge misunderstanding of some sort, and I really hope that changes.
Infection rates have tripled in the past few weeks, with Moscow hit hardest. Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin says the new Delta strain now accounts for nearly 90% of all new coronavirus cases, and with it, a new death record toll that is likely to rise, say experts.
Definitely more people are going to die if they do not vaccinate before we beat this disease.
That grim reality has forced authorities to reintroduce restrictions ending months of near normalcy. Cafes and restaurants are only open for the vaccinated or those who can prove they're healthy with a government-issued digital QR code. State entities and service sector businesses must also ensure at least 60% of staff are vaccinated within a month, forcing some to choose between their job or the needle.
Like most people, I'm here because my employer said I had to get vaccinated.
Half a year after the vaccine's arrival, the demand for Sputnik V is finally palpable, say health workers.
We've been working here since January 19th, quite some time. But in the past week, we've seen those wishing to get vaccinated increase threefold.
President Vladimir Putin has joined the campaign, ending months of speculation to say he too was vaccinated by Russia's Sputnik V out of the public eye. But polls show widespread resistance to vaccination persists, and the Kremlin has quietly abandoned its goal of inoculating 60% of the population by the fall. Meanwhile, authorities have allowed some high-profile public events to go ahead, despite the surge in infections. It's a mixed messaging that some fear undercuts the government's coronavirus response and legitimate efforts to contain the contagion spread. Charles Maines for VOA News, Moscow.
From Moscow, we move to West Africa, where Cameroonian officials on the border with Central African Republic say rebels of the Central African Republic have been sneaking across the border to steal cattle and abduct villages for ransom. The rebels have been fleeing the Central African military following post-election violence. For VOA News, Mukiedu Nkinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Officials in Cameroon accuse CAR rebels of entering the country's territory and harassing civilians and others displaced by fighting in the neighboring country. Officials say the rebels then take cattle and food from Cameroonian ranchers and farmers. About 30 civilians were abducted in June with demands for family members to pay ransoms of between $1,000 to $10,000 per person to guarantee their safe return. Authorities say people suspected of collaborating with Cameroonian officials to denounce the rebels who are hiding in villages along the Cameroon border are also abducted and tortured in retaliation. Kildadi Tageke Buka is governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon that shares a border with the CAR. He visited Mbere, an administrative unit in the Adamawa region, on Monday. He says Cameroon's President Paul Biya asked him to make sure that the military is deployed to protect host communities and people displaced by the fighting in the CAR. He spoke by the messaging app WhatsApp from Johong, a commercial town in Mbere.
The Mbere division shares more than 160 kilometers of border with Central Africa. And along this border, rebels encroach our territory, till cows. We have come to reinforce the forces of law and order, encourage the population to be on alert and to inform the hierarchy of the situation which is going on at this border.
Buka did not say how many government troops have been deployed to stop the CAR rebels. He said the troops seized weapons illegally trafficked into Cameroon by the rebels. Cameroon has not given figures on the number of cattle taken by the rebels. The government says economic activity is at a nosedive in Johong and Gawi, villages with the largest cattle markets in Mbere. The markets sell about 100 cows a week, down from at least 1,000 every week last year. Cattle ranchers accuse the rebels of either stealing money and their cows or the fear of being tortured. Buyers say they can no longer stop in border markets with the CAR for fear they will be abducted or their money taken. Umaru Isama is mayor of Johong. He says civilians are held in the bush for several weeks until their families pay ransom to the rebels. He says CAR rebels are escaping heavy fighting with government troops and crossing with weapons into Johong. He says the fighting is increasing the number of displaced persons from the CAR escaping post-election violence. He spoke by the messaging app WhatsApp from Johong.
Tout le monde sait qu'à Yamba, à la frontière avec la RCA, il y a des bruits de bottes.
Isama says civilians at Cameroon's border village of Yamba near Johong suffer most from the fighting in neighboring CAR. He says since June 15, 3,000 of the 6,500 people living in Yamba are displaced persons from CAR. He says the host community and displaced persons are again witnessing regular fighting over lodging, water, food, and farmland. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
That's all we prepared for you tonight. We would like to welcome Mayardit 90.7 FM in Turale, Twitch County, to the family of VOA affiliate stations across South Sudan. We now leave you with Sharif Ahmad with the song Jamila. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.